Welcome to BioIT World's Trends from the Trenches podcast, your insider's look at the science, technology, and executive trends driving the life sciences. I'm Allison Proffitt, editor of BioIT World. This episode is hosted by Stan Gloss, founder of BioTeam, a life sciences IT consulting company at the intersection of science, data, and technology. Joining Stan today is Joseph LaBarge, CEO of Apertura Gene Therapy and former chief business officer at Spark Therapeutics. Together, they discuss biotech entrepreneurship, capsid engineering, and the future of gene therapy. Let's listen in.
Good morning, Joe. I'm so excited to have you as a guest on our podcast today. I'm looking forward to having a conversation because a lot of my people who are listening to this podcast have lots of ideas. And today we're going to really kind of go at the startup journey and tell a little bit a story of another startup. And you can't, I don't know, I'm a glutton for startup stories because I love hearing how all the different ways people decide to bring up the business. So before we get into the story, maybe you can tell us a little bit about you, and we can tell us a little bit about your company too. Give us a little intro.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be with you today, Stan. Looking forward to the conversation. So I guess I have a little bit of a non-direct way of how I've gotten into biotech and life sciences. So I am not a scientist by training, not a doctor by training. I'm actually a lawyer by training. I started my career almost 25 years ago in private practice, and cut all my early legal teeth on biotech companies, working on raising capital for them, working on striking collaborations and licenses and other novel and ways to fund companies to get them to continue to grow. And I am just really passionate about medicine and science, and it was a very good way for me to combine my legal training with making a difference in society and advancing medicine. And so that's the way I initially got into biotech. And I quickly found that I really wanted to move more and more towards the business side of it. I moved initially into an in-house general counsel role at a biotech company. And then ultimately in 2013 landed with a friend, Jeff Marazzo, who was then the CEO of Spark Therapeutics. I joined Spark as a chief legal officer in 2013 as employee number five. If you know the Spark story, we were a gene therapy company spun out of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. A very unique and novel approach to forming that company, where we had CHOP as a sole investor to begin with, and then proceeded to go out, raise external funds, advance programs, ultimately go public. And then 6 years later, we're acquired by Roche. I then became the chief business officer at Spark for 2 years. And then after 2 years of being settled into the Roche organization, decided it was time to do it all over again. And so it's when I landed at Apertura Gene Therapy. We are also in the gene therapy space. We're focused on really developing the next wave of gene therapies, and we can dive in a bit on what that means. Mm-hmm. Very excited to continue to advance genetic medicines and really make a real huge impact on patients' lives and the lives of families who have children with genetic diseases.
So before we jump into Apertura, help me understand the journey through where the idea came from. You gave us the previous one through CHOP and got funded through, but help me understand the beginnings of the concepts. Where did Apertura come out of? I know that you got some funding through Deerfield. So give us a little of that background, and then we're going to get into what we're really all about today.
Sure, absolutely. So, I think we, as you are right, we are funded by Deerfield Management. They founded the company in 2021. And really the premise at the time was gene therapy over the past decade, decade and a half has demonstrated itself to be both safe and effective at treating a number of different diseases, right? We've seen the approval of Luxturna, which was actually the Spark story and the first approved gene therapy in the United States, which treats a rare form of inherited blindness and restored vision to kids who otherwise had no treatment options. Miraculous drugs like Zolgensma, which treats a fatal disease in children called spinal muscular atrophy. And so I think the premise behind Apertura was gene therapy is a proven modality that can have dramatic impact on patients' lives. But I think one of the things that was clear over the last decade was we need significant technological advancement in the gene therapy space in order for it to reach its full potential. And I think what I mean by that is, you know, I think many of the gene therapy programs that have either made it to commercialization or that are currently in the clinic have used what we would call naturally occurring serotypes. So gene therapy in its core is using the shell of a virus to package a genetic payload and deliver it to a specific organ or tissue of interest to treat a disease. Naturally occurring serotypes are just as they sound. They are occurring naturally in our world, and most of us have been exposed to them. And they are a very effective tool at getting payloads into the body, but they are also limited in that they are not really able to access hard-to-reach tissues. And so two good examples of that would be almost no naturally occurring serotype can cross the blood-brain barrier so that you could administer a drug intravenously and have it get into the CNS. And you know, other tissues like kidney have been almost impossible to reach with naturally occurring serotypes. Muscle tissue has also been a challenge. Some of the ways in which the field has addressed these challenges to date is to ratchet their gene therapy doses higher and higher and higher. And that obviously has significant consequences from a safety perspective. And so I think what Deerfield saw and what I saw in diligencing Apertura and deciding to join was there is an opportunity to engineer better delivery vehicles, bioengineered what we call capsids or engineered viruses to get into hard to reach tissues. And then the other challenge that I think the gene therapy field has seen and the one of the ones that Apertura is seeking to address is really around gene expression. And so there is a lot of opportunity to improve the ways in which the genetic payloads that we're delivering can be expressed. Mm-hmm. That is trying to tune expression so that it is higher or that it is lower or that it hits a kind of a Goldilocks zone where you're not giving too much and you're not giving too little. And then I think ultimately the ability to use other either small molecules or other triggers in essence to turn your genetic payload of interest on or off. And so we think there's lots of opportunities, you know, down the road to be able to really evolve gene therapy so that we can go after many more devastating and hard to reach diseases.
Well, that's a great description of the company. I'm also a little curious about how working with a company like Deerfield, how does that benefit any young company to have a partner like a Deerfield? There are other groups out that help companies. How does that, because we don't often talk about that part of the story.
Yeah, great question. And I think, having a partner like Deerfield, as I was thinking about the opportunity, was important to me. I mean, I think a couple things. One, you know, Deerfield were early investors in Spark. They were early investors in AveXis. They are committed to the gene therapy space. They have, a large amount of capital that they are able to tap and deploy, and which means you have a stable investor behind you. And I think what has been, to me, very reassuring and encouraging over the last year and a half or more that I've been with the company, these have not been ideal capital market environments, right? Raising capital, either privately or publicly over the last 2 years has been a really significant challenge. And so having a company, an investor like Deerfield, who is committed to the therapeutic space, who's committed to the modality, and has capital to deploy, can allow people like me and the people that I hire on my team to focus on advancing the science and developing programs that can ultimately get to the clinic, and do so in a way there where we are not, you know, worrying day to day, week to week, you know, will we have capital to keep advancing them?
That's fantastic. So how big and how many scientists, and give us a scope of how are you doing this?
Yeah, so we're actually headquartered in New York. Deerfield owns a building at 26th and Park that's called The Cure. They've started building it or started renovating it about 4 or 5 years ago. And it is a biotech ecosystem that's dedicated to advancing healthcare. And so we are one of a number of tenants in that building that are all in the healthcare or biotech space. We have in that building operational lab space where we have a fully functional research vector core that can manufacture virus for our ongoing preclinical programs, as well as advance some of our platform work. And we are lean right now, I would say. And I think that's a reflection of wanting to be good stewards of Deerfield's capital, recognizing that the capital market is challenging right now. So we have about, I would say, 22 full-time employees. The vast majority of those are manufacturing or science-based personnel who are working on advancing our internal programs and our platforms.
So I'm going to give you an opportunity for a shameful plug. Are you looking to grow your staff? Because it sounds like what you're doing is really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think my my approach is, you know, staying lean and staying nimble in these early days, especially as a Series A company, is critically important to giving us optionality. But as we move through this year and we check off what I think will be some very important milestones, we'll be definitely looking to bring more people onto the team.
What do you hope to accomplish and what are your goals for the next year? Because obviously that's, you have to be driven towards something.
Yep, absolutely. So I think I mentioned kind of the underlying premise of the company and thinking about better delivery vehicles and better gene expression. You know, our primary focus presently has been around better delivery vehicles, because the way I've been thinking about gene therapy in general is, when you think about going after any specific indication, you first need a delivery vehicle to get you where you want to go. And our primary focus to date has been on the CNS, although our platform engineering capabilities are agnostic as to the type of tissue we want to go after. But our primary focus right now is CNS. So I can share in a minute some of the really exciting developments we've had on that front, but we wanted to first develop a engineered capsid that we could administer intravenously and get across the blood-brain barrier and into the CNS. We've checked that box, and we're advancing a novel capsid that I can share a little more detail about, but that we're very, very excited about the data that we're generating. And then you think about what indication we're going to go after, and then do you need a specific enhancer or promoter or something related to the gene expression. And so where we have really been focused is on two fronts. One, working with our scientific co-founder, Ben Deverman, who is at the Broad Institute and is really his science and his engineering efforts have been some of the foundational IP and technology on which the company was based. In developing a novel capsid. And I think we announced at the very beginning of this year that we have now engineered a novel AAV virus that has been engineered to target the human transferrin receptor. For people who don't know what that is, the human transferrin receptor is a receptor that's highly expressed on the blood-brain barrier. There are a number of other biologics in the antibody space that have either clinical data behind them, or in one case, a commercialized product in Japan that have used that receptor in the non-gene therapy context to shuttle biologics across the blood-brain barrier, which is a very, I don't know, if, and this is probably, you'll recognize that I'm going to dive into my lawyerly here. I'm not sure. It's a very semi-permeable barrier that blocks a lot of things from getting into mm-hmm. the blood-brain barrier into the CNS. But if you can unlock the being able to transfer things from outside the barrier inside, it opens up being able to use the vasculature for delivery to, you know, all regions of the brain and the spinal cord. And so we have now developed a capsid, which is the first of its kind to target that receptor, to be able to use that to shuttle our gene therapy payloads of interest across the blood-brain barrier and open up opportunities to go after a number of different indications in the CNS.
So I have a family member that's struggling with Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about the CNS, I'm closing my eyes and thinking about the amyloid paradox, where everybody is so hyper-focused on amyloid plaques and taus and entanglements and stuff like that. And, you know, realistically, this is an inflammatory disease that passes across the blood-brain barrier. And how do we manage that? And I could be thinking of other things like multiple sclerosis and other types of CNS, you know, certainly illnesses that we could really change the lives of people significantly if we, ALS is another, could there be eventually cures to these kinds of things? And this is worth waking up every day and jumping out of bed to go work on. So it must be very exciting for you to do that.
It is. It's really exciting. And I think, you know, if you look at the progress that, again, gene therapy has made and the opportunities that gene therapy have to really go after those exact types of diseases that you just mentioned, the biggest challenge that has been facing the industry to date is delivery to the CNS. Zolgensma, which I mentioned earlier, which is also, you know, CNS focused, used AAV9, which is a naturally occurring serotype, but they were very limited in the patients that they could go after because of the difficulty that they had in getting AAV9 across the blood-brain barrier, right? If we can open up that opportunity to get significant amount of genetic material into the brain, it opens up, you know, opportunities to go after indications like Alzheimer's, like Parkinson's, like ALS.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest challenge has been delivery, right? Having from a commercial perspective, and there are also biological reasons why this is challenging, but, you know, local administration to the brain is not something anybody really wants to tackle, right? No one wants to stop a hole in your skull and inject things directly into the brain. So being able to use the vasculature and intravenous injection would be kind of really a huge leap forward for gene therapy.
So as a growing company, all growing companies run into things that they struggle with. What are you struggling with these days?
So I think, you know, one of the things that I share frequently with the team is, right, you need strong backers, you need good scientists and good science underpinning it, and some luck, right? I mean, I think that's part of the calculus of developing any biotech company. And I think one of the things that is always a struggle, right, is, you know, science advances kind of non-linearly, right? It you'd like to think that you can find one idea and you can advance it, but it has twists and turns and setbacks and challenges. And so I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, we have been really focused on is our approach to that we've taken to engineering the capsid that I just mentioned that binds the human transferrin receptor. That was a not a straight line mm-hmm. in terms of about that. And so, you know, that was an effort that you know, some the bioengineering of capsids by the company and by our scientific co-founder Ben, you know, long preceded me joining the company mm-hmm. and had to make some twists and turns and thinking about, you know, how can we do it in a way that will really differentiate us from the field mm-hmm. and make a meaningful leap. And I think, you know, one of the things that has been a huge challenge in the industry is, you know, if you think about capsid engineering, largely it has been accomplished for the last decade or decade and a half through iterative screening and what I would characterize as brute force, right? Companies and academics make libraries of these novel capsids, and then they put them in a mouse model or they put them in a non-human primate, and then they see basically where they go. And then if they find something that goes to the place they think is of interest, then they figure out, you know, they try to figure out why it's working. In many circumstances, that's hard to discern. And mm-hmm. then you need to have a significant leap of faith that if I saw it work in a non-human primate, am I confident that it will work in a human? And I think right. that has, in drug development, that has always been a huge challenge. And in gene therapy in particular, it has been a huge challenge, right? Just because it works in a specific animal model does not mean it will translate to humans. And I think that's one of the places where we have now made significant progress in that, as opposed to trying to engineer something that we know would work in a non-human primate, we in essence skip the non-human primate to say we're going to engineer this to work directly with a known human receptor. And I think that's a big leap in the field in terms of both its approach and its ultimate results.
Well, boy, I'm listening to your story and I'm relating it to personally, because for a non-scientist, you sound pretty damn good to me.
That's 10 years of 10 years of being in the space. You kind of pick up the lingo.
Yeah, and just to be 100% transparent, I started my career off as a respiratory therapist, and I too have just spent a lot of time with on the job training in the industry and being curious and listening. And so your story kind of resonates personally with me. Last question is, there are other entrepreneurs out there who have ideas, and any advice to those scientists that are out there doing really novel science and really want to bring it to market? Any words of wisdom for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question, because there is a lot of great science being done across academic labs all over the US. And I think, you know, I will also shamelessly plug the US here, right? Because I think it is one of the really the leaders in biotech and drug development still. I mean, I don't think anyone else in the world compares to the US. And so I think maintaining our leadership place in that space is hugely important from both an economic perspective and a growth perspective, but of the advancement of medicine. And so I think the advice I would give to academics and others who are advancing novel ideas is be obviously rigorous and focused on the science that you are developing. Have a clear understanding of what its ultimate application could be in a non-academic setting. Don't necessarily let perfection be the enemy of the good, right? I think there is always a desire within for scientists to constantly iterate and see if they can just get it a little bit better. That's a never-ending cycle, and at some point you need to look at something and say, yeah, this is good enough to move forward. And then I would say, you know, speak with the investment community, the folks like Deerfield or the other investors who are willing to take bets and risks on early science when they see an improvement over the existing science or technological approaches out there. and recognize that, you know, this is a long haul process, right? The number of scientific advancements that make their way from academic lab to company to exit, say, in a very short amount of time are very, very few, right? These are multi-year, if not, you know, multi-decade investments that ultimately need to be made.
Well, Joe, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's really been a pleasure and honor. And keep working hard, because families like mine need you to be successful. Okay.
Thank you, Stan. It was a pleasure meeting you and speaking with you today, and look forward to continuing our work and reporting back.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.